ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this morning we're beginning our study of the 12th canto. So the verses will cover our first chapter, texts 1 and 2. So the word meaning Sri Sukha Uvacha, Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Yahu Antya, the final member of the lineage described in the ninth canto, Paranjaya, Rupanjaya, Nama, named, Bhavishya, will live in the future, Barahadrata, the descendant of Bhadrath, Brihadrat, Tasya, his, Amatya, minister to, but Sunaka, Hatva, killing, Swaminam, his master, Atmajam, his own son, Pradyot Samyam, named Pradyota, Rajanam, the king, Karta, will make, yet, whose, Palaka, named Palaka, Suta, the son, Vishakyupa, Tatputra, the son of Palaka, Bhavita, will be Rajaka, Tata, then, coming as a son of Vishakyupa. Sri Sukha Uvacha, Yoncha Paranjayo Nama, Avishyo Bharata, Bara Hadrata, Tasyam Machastu Sanako, Hatva Swaminam Atmajam, Prajyota Samgyam Rajanam, Karta Yat Palaka Suta, Vishakya Yupastat Putro, Bhavita Rajakastata, Shishuku Vacha, Yoncha Puranjayo Nama, Bhavishyo Bharadatrita, Tasyamattastusunako, Hatva Swaminam Atmajam, Prajyota Samyag Rajanam, Karta Yat Palaka Suta, Vishakya Yup Pastat Putro, Bhavita Rajakastata.
Pradyota samyam rajanam,
Karta yat palaka
Dantaya Panatana Sutaha Vishaka Yuvastat Putro Savitara Yuvastataha
Shri Shuka Vacha
Yogya Puranjayo Nama
Anyone else? All right, I'm going to do something a little different here today. I'm going to read the translation to this verse right now, but we'll come back and read the purport a little later because part of what we're scheduled to do today is to introduce the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Obviously, this is the last canto that we have here, although we understand from Srila Prabhupada that there are more cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam that exist in other planets and other places describing the glories of the Lord. But we have 12 cantos, and this is the last. And so, by way of introduction, 12th canto deals with the age of Kali and how things, what things will happen in the age of Kali as a result of the Lord wrapping up his pastimes and leaving the world. And so what I thought we'd do to start to get some feeling for the age of Kali before we discuss it more in detail is to go to the second chapter, which Kalakanta Prabhu also wanted us to sort of cover as background for today's verse. Go to the second chapter, and I'll just read some translations which describe what Kali Yuga will be like. We live in Kali Yuga right now, but it's going to get a lot worse, according to the descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll just read some of those translations to get an idea of what's coming or what may be here already. As we go through this, it's interesting to think about how we can see some of these things already manifest in our daily lives. So, second chapter, Sukadeva Goswami said, "Then, O King," is this the first verse or is this the second one? No, first verse. "Then, O King, religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength, and memory will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of the age of Kali. In Kali Yuga, wealth alone will be considered the sign of a man's good birth, proper behavior, and fine qualities. And law and justice will apply only on the basis of one's power. Men and women will live together merely because of superficial attraction, and success in business will depend upon deceit. Womanliness and manliness will be judged according to one's expertise in sex, and a man will be known as a Brahmin just by wearing a thread. A person's spiritual position will be ascertained merely according to the external symbols, and on that the same basis people will change from one spiritual order to the next. A person's propriety will be seriously questioned if he does not earn a good living, and a man who is very clever at juggling words will be considered a learned scholar. Did you laugh over there? Okay, we got some personal experience coming from this corner of the room here. A person will be judged unholy if he does not have money, and hypocrisy will be accepted as virtue. Marriage will be arranged simply by verbal agreement, and a person will think he is fit to appear in public if he has merely taken a bath. A sacred place will be taken as to consist of no more than a reservoir of water located at a distance, and beauty will be thought to depend on one's hairstyle. Filling the belly will become the goal of life, and one who is audacious will be accepted as truthful. One who can maintain a family will be regarded as an expert man, and the principles of religion will be observed only for the sake of reputation. As the earth thus becomes crowded with corrupt population, whoever among any of the social classes shows himself to be the strongest will gain political power. Losing their wives and property to such avaricious and merciless rulers who will behave no better than ordinary thieves, the citizens will flee to the mountains and forests. That's one of the reasons why Prabhupada wanted us to have farm communities, to be able to receive people as they flee from the cities in the age of Kali. Harassed by famine and excessive taxes, people will resort to eating leaves, roots, flesh, wild honey, fruits, flowers, and seeds. Sought by drought, they will become completely ruined. The citizens will suffer greatly from cold, wind, heat, rain, and snow. They will be further tormented by quarrels, hunger, thirst, and disease and severe anxieties. I happened to be looking on the internet the other day at my hometown, and Krishna Kripa will know this. We're from the same area in upstate New York, so I happened to be looking at the newspaper there, and they had just had a winter storm. And it was horrifying, actually, to see the effects and the ice and cold. There were icicles hanging from houses as long as from ceiling to the floor here in this room. And I just thought, my God, I used to live in that place. I can't believe it. Being tormented by cold and snow, as it's described here in the verse. Of course, Maharaj from North Dakota, I guess, gets a little cold up there too. But these things, and I think as we discuss today, you'll see these things they become abnormal. It's all right, a little cold is something we have to tolerate in this world. But in Kali Yuga, these things become abnormal, and the people are harassed by these things. The duration of life for human beings in Kali Yuga will become 50 years. And here's the text where I wanted to end. It's a long description of Kali Yuga. By the time the age of Kali ends, the bodies of all creatures will be greatly reduced in size, and religious principles of followers of Varnashram will be ruined. The path of the Vedas will be completely forgotten in human society, and so-called religion will be mostly atheistic. Kings will mostly be thieves. The occupations of men will be stealing, lying, and needless violence, and all the social classes will be reduced to the lowest level of sudras. Cows will be like goats. Spiritual hermitages will be no different from mundane houses, and family ties will extend no further than the immediate bonds of marriage. Most plants and herbs will be tiny, and all trees will appear like dwarf shami trees. Clouds will be full of lightning, homes will be devoid of piety, and all human beings will become like asses. At that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear on earth, acting with the power of pure spiritual goodness. He will rescue eternal religion. So these are some descriptions of Kali Yuga. Obviously a greatly impious time that has various effects. It has effects on our mind, on our body, the environment we live in. All of these things will be affected by the age of Kali. As you know, there are four ages that are there, Satya, Dwarapara, Treta, and Kali. We can think of them almost maybe like four seasons of the year. They're different manifestations that we see in the four seasons, even in terms of people's mentality, disposition, what to speak of the physical environments that they're in. So similarly, the age of Kali has all of these kind of difficulties that people will have to undergo. So one might question, other than this being the plan of the Supreme Lord, how are these things really ushered in? What's the gate that allows all these bad qualities of Kali Yuga to enter in? Again, besides being the plan of the Supreme Lord and how this world works, there are three particular symptoms, three particular gates that open the age of Kali. And they're described in Bhagavad Gita in the 16th chapter. Let's see here. Can anybody guess what they are while I'm looking up the verse? I heard him out there. Lust, anger, and greed. Yes. Lust, anger, and greed are the vehicles which all these bad, inauspicious qualities of Kali enter. Yeah, 1621, yes. Srila Prabhupada's translation. There are three gates leading to this hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give up these, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. And so this is sort of a concluding verse in a series of verses where this hell is described. And the description of this hell being described starts with a demoniac person thinking, Ishvara ham aham bogi, siddho ham balavan suki. Demoniac persons think, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer, I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So that mentality, and I want to point out specifically that it's a mentality, because Kali Yuga begins on a subtle, in a very subtle way, with the mentality, with this type of mentality, where people start thinking that by my own efforts, I can secure whatever I need in this universe, in my life, and I will stoop to any level to get it, even if it means killing other human beings or treating people in various bad ways. This mentality is what is the gate to these things, lust, anger, and greed, which are described in the subsequent verses of this chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And it's interesting to note that these begin with a mentality, and the descriptions of Kali Yuga also begin with the same type of mentality. There are further verses in the second chapter here of the 11th of the 12th canto that describe the same thing. It says, the materialistic kings think, this unbounded earth was held by my predecessors and is now under my sovereignty. How can I arrange for it to remain in the hands of my sons, grandsons, and other descendants? Although foolish people accept the body made of earth, water, and fire as me, and the earth as mine, in every case they have ultimately abandoned both. They are ultimately abandoned both by their bodies and the earth passed into oblivion. And it goes on to describe here the same mentality that the kings, the corrupt kings in Kali Yuga have. And so the age of Kali, and indeed all the ages, are brought in by first the subtle mentality of the people. It begins to change. In Alachua, we're reading in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the age changes from Satya Yuga to Treta Yuga. It's the story of Pururava. Yes. And so there it describes that Pururava, when the age changed, the process of sacrifice to achieve what he wanted appeared within his mind. And so the seed of how these ages change begins with the subtle movements of the mind and how one thinks about the world and how, therefore, one goes about approaching the world. And Kali Yuga, people think that they're the controller, that there are no restrictions to what they can do, and therefore their activities proceed and the age becomes further and further degraded, particularly invited by lust, anger, and greed. So if we examine these things, lust, anger, and greed, in terms of histories that are related in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can see how these things become manifest. And that's where we go to today's verse. Because today's verse talks about the dynasties of Kali Yuga and how they have become particularly, how they began to be degraded. So at this point, we'll pick up reading the purport, and maybe you can start with reading the purport. No, I don't remember. No, we didn't read the translation. We read the Sanskrit. We didn't read the English translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, the last king mentioned in our previous enumeration of the future rulers of the Magadha dynasty was Paranjana, who will take birth as the descendant of Brihadratta. Paranjaya's minister, Sunaka, will assassinate the king and install his own son, Pradyota, on the throne. The son of Pradyota will be Palaka, and his son will be Vishakayupta, and his son will be Rajaka. So,
the vicious political intrigue describes here is symptomatic of the age of Kali. In the ninth canto of the work, Sukadeva Goswami describes how the great rulers of men descends from two royal dynasties, that of the sun and that of the moon. The ninth canto's description of Lord Ramachandra, a most famous incarnation of God, occurs in the genealogical narration. And at the end of the ninth canto, Sukadeva describes the forefathers of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Finally, the appearance of Lord Krishna and that of Lord Balaram are mentioned within the context of the narration of the Moon Dynasty. The 10th canto is devoted exclusively to a description of Lord Krishna's childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, his teenage activities in Mathura, and his adult activities in Dwarka. The famous epic Mahabharata also describes the events of this period, focusing upon the five Pandava brothers and their activities and relations with Lord Krishna and other leading historical figures such as Bhishma, Dhritarashtra, Dronacharya, and Vidura. Within the Mahabharata is Bhagavad Gita, in which Lord Krishna is declared to be the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, of which we are presently translating the 12th and final canto, is considered a more advanced literature than the Mahabharata, because throughout the entire work, Lord Sri Krishna, the absolute truth and supreme source of all existence, is directly, centrally, and irrefutably revealed. In fact, the first canto of Bhagavatam describes how Sri Vyasadeva composed this great work because he was dissatisfied with his rather sporadic glorification of Lord Krishna in the Mahabharata.
Although Srimad Bhagavatam narrates the histories of many royal dynasties and the lives of innumerable kings, not until the description of the present age, the age of Kali, do we find a minister assassinating his own king and installing his son on the throne. This incident resembles Dhritarashtra's attempt to assassinate the Pandavas and crown his son Duryodhana king. As the Mahabharata describes, Lord Krishna thwarted this attempt. With the departure of the Lord for the spiritual sky, the age of Kali became fully manifested, ushering in political assassination with one's own house as a standard technique.
Okay, thank you. So the Kshatriyas are obviously an important section of society, and so much of the literature, Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata is mentioned here, deals with the activities of the kings and their various mentalities. But as pointed out by the translators here, now we see something new that's being introduced in their behavior. Throughout all the descriptions that we find in the 11th cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, this type of political intrigue is a new element that's being introduced in Kali Yuga, political assassination. And we see that if we just take a look at history, particularly history since of the last century, let's say from 1900 to 2000, so much political assassination has very great effects on the history of the world. World War I began with the political assassination. We find that in India, for instance, Gandhi was assassinated. And then the United States had its own history of assassination in the 1960s, particularly where three political leaders were assassinated, and another was permanently handicapped by political assassination attempt. And throughout the world, this is a standard operating procedure now. In previous ages, this wouldn't even have been considered. So this is an influence of the age of Kali, particularly pushed by greed. Just one other note before I go on to greed. We can see how things are progressing in this way because in the United States, for instance, it's been 50 years since Kennedy was inaugurated. And during his election campaign, if you see pictures, many times in many places he would ride in an open car sitting on top of the back seat and being a very good target. But that was a standard campaign style. People would sit in the back of a car. But now if you see Obama or any leader now, you'll never see them doing that. You'll never see him sitting like that anymore. Because Kali Yuga becomes more degraded, and now they know that, well, you can't do that because you could be subject to assassination. Even I think Gandhi's walk that he took, you know, would be much different these days. Because of the reality of political assassination. And so These things are progressions. We can see them in our own lives, how things are degrading. And particularly in regard to those in government, this fault of greed is very, very prominent. People want to be in the position of governmental responsibility simply to line their pockets with the money of the citizens because of greed. Because of greed here, the Paranjaya's minister assassinated the king simply so that their family could be in control and line their pockets. And so this particular fault of greed is something that affects those in political positions in the age of Kali. Similarly, lust and anger have their positions in Kali Yuga where they affect different sections. If we take a look at another history that's given in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the advent of Kali Yuga, we can see where anger played a particularly important quality, isn't it? If we look back to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where there's a description of how Kali Yuga advented in the 18th chapter of this work. And it tells a history of Maharaj Parikshit and Shamik Rishi and Shamik Rishi's son Sringi. And I just want to read for you a little bit of that history so we can get some idea of what was driving the situation there. Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued, hungry, and thirsty while following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamika Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with closed eyes. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities, and he was situated in a trance apart from the three wakeful dream and consciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute, the sage in meditation was covered with the skin of a stag and long compressed hair was scattered all over him. The king, whose palate was dry from thirst, asked him for water. The king was not received by any formal welcome by means of being offered a seat, place, and water and sweet address, considered himself neglected, and so thinking he became angry. O Brahmana, the king's anger and envy directed toward the Brahmin sage were unprecedented. And being thus, being that circumstances had made him hungry and thirsty. It's interesting in this verse, it says that were unprecedented. The king's anger and envy directed toward the Brahmin's sage were unprecedented. It means that prior to the influence of Kali Yuga, these kind of feelings of anger toward a sage, envy towards a sage, would not have arisen in the mind. So this is the influence of Kali coming in, as I mentioned before, how things become exaggerated. I was talking about the cold becomes exaggerated and it harasses people. So here we see anger in an unprecedented way being manifest. Now, of course, we know that in his anger, he took a snake, dead snake that was on the ground nearby, and he garlanded the sage Shamik Rishi with this, and then he went off. But hearing about this incident, the Brahmin son of Shamik Rishi, who was named Sringi, became very angry. And here's what he had to say. The son had a sage who was very powerful, being a Brahmana's son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there the boy spoke as follows. Just look at the sins of the rulers who, like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetuate sins against their masters, contrary to principles governing servants. Now, is this the attitude of the Brahmin? Should a Brahmin have such an attitude? It's an unprecedented kind of feelings that are arising in his heart. He goes on to say, the descendants of the king, he orders, are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can a dog enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate? At the departure of Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead and supreme ruler of everyone, these upstarts have flourished, our protection being gone. Therefore, I myself shall take up this matter and punish them. Just witness my power. The son of the Rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Kosika while speaking to his playmates and thus discharged the following thunderbolt of words. The Brahmin son cursed the king thus, on the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite the most wretched one that is of that dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. And so anger overcame him, and therefore he misused his power. Just like greed overcomes the kingly order, and they misuse their power to accumulate wealth for themselves, the Brahmin class here are shown to be particularly influenced by this anger, and the anger overcame the Brahmin, and therefore he misused his power. Of course, when his father, Shamaka Rishi, found out about this, he realized the mistake of his son, and he lamented, and his lamentation was just to the point of today's verse, that, oh, just see how the age of Kali has now entered when the Brahmins are disagreeing and having angry exchanges with the sages. So greed affecting the Kshatriyas, anger affecting the Brahmanas, and what affects the common man? Lust affects the common man. This is described at the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the first chapter, or a very famous verse about the age of Kali. This is introduced, the bad influences of Kali are introduced right at the very beginning, and the whole 10 cantos of Bhagavatam are given, which help push back these effects, but now we see we're at the 12th canto, and these bad influences of Kali are entering. So that verse, it's a famous verse, Prayanal Payusha Sabdha Kalo Yasmin Yugejana Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya Hiyupadruta. O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, and lucky, and above all, always disturbed. Let me read a little bit about from Srila Prabhupada's purport, which I may suggest to you why I'm saying that lust is particularly affecting the common man. Srila Prabhupada says, in Kali Yuga, the duration of life is shortened so much, not so much because of insufficient food, but because of irregular habits. By keeping regular habits and eating simple food, a man can maintain his health. Overeating, over-sense gratification, over-dependent on another's mercy, and artificial standards of living sap the very vitality of human energy. Therefore, the duration of life is shortened. It says here, in this age, men are victims not only of different political creeds and parties, but also of many different types of sense gratificatory diversions, such as cinemas, sports, gambling, clubs, mundane libraries, bad associations, smoking, drinking, cheating, pilfering, bickering, and so on. Their minds are always disturbed and full of anxieties due to so many different engagements. In this age, many unscrupulous men manufacture their own religious faith, which are not based on any revealed scripture, and very often people are addicted to sense gratification. people who are addicted to sense gratification are attracted by such institutions. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining all these things to be distractions. Because one's desires are running wild, so to speak, one is very easily distracted from the principal activity in life. As I mentioned in Lachua, we're studying the ninth canto, and it's described there that in the Satya Yuga, there was only one class of men. There was only one class of men. Does anybody know what that one class was? It was Hamsa. You know. And what's the significance of Hamsa or Paramahamsa? What can a swan do? What's its particular skill? Yeah, it can take milk out of the water. Milk can be mixed with water, but a swan can go there and just the milk, not the water. Now, that takes some concentration. You can't be distracted, you know. You're gonna get just the milk. You have to be distracted. You have to be fixed. And so that was the quality of men in Satya Yuga, because this lust or desire to gratify one's senses was reduced. But in Kali Yuga, the lid is blown off of that, and everyone is filled with lusty desires, and so therefore there are so many distractions that keep one from the straight and narrow path of utilizing the human form of life for achieving God consciousness. And so for the common man, lust is the enemy in the age of Kali, which degrades them more and more. And it's interesting, it's described here, Prabhupada talks about the vitality of human energy being sapped by these things, overeating, over-sense gratification, over-dependence on another's mercy. These things are meant or promoted as being freedom and what should be properly indulged in life. But they're actually sapping the vitality of human energy. Therefore, we get this in Kali Yuga, the stature. Remember, we read the characteristics at the beginning. The stature becomes small. The mental capacity becomes reduced. And physical ailments become a big problem. I mean, if we want to really pass health care, we should tell everyone to be Hare Krishnas, because then the chances of being affected by these diseases become reduced. Now, we used to think like that in the beginning, you know, days. You think, you know, that devotees wouldn't get this disease, that disease, and everything because of the healthy lifestyle. And generally they don't. However, prior to coming to Krishna consciousness, because these things were the way of life, later these things come up and start affecting people's health and life. And so this is how lusty desires affect. So lust, anger, and greed affect the populace in these different ways, particularly attacking where they can do the most damage. Greed among the political class, anger among the Brahmins, the learned class and men, and lust in the people in general. So that's a little introduction to Kali Yuga from this from the 12th canto. Any questions or comments anyone has about these subject matters? Well, according to the Bhagavatam descriptions in Age of Kali, the duration of life is decreasing. But according to scientists, duration of life is increasing. It's interesting that I just noticed when I was reading in the 12th canto here that there is a footnote that they put in there when in that section that describes the age of Kali. And it's a footnote that describes what is the real, how we calculate the real thing. There's a little asterisk and it says, according to the United States Statistical Abstract for 1984, there were about 3.7 million live births in the United States in 1982, and the average life expectancy at birth was 74.5 years. But when the 1.5 million abortions were added to the live births, the average life expectancy for conceived children falls to 53 years. And so statistics, we all know, can be manipulated in one way or another. And so when we get these ideas, these statistics talk about life expectancy increasing, I don't know that how much faith we can actually put in them. Additionally to the fact, I mean, even Prabhupada would say that in his own experience in his early life, he saw many more people living a great, you know, longer lifespan than now. And so just putting a number out there, it went against not only the Bhagavatam for him, but also his personal experience. And he put that on us also. He said, even your fathers and great grandfathers and things, they were living longer. The bodily strength was more. And it's a fact. I mean, more of society today works in offices and less physical work than previously. And I think by our own experience, we can understand that means that the strength is less, because if your life is based upon physical labor, you're obviously going to be stronger and utilize your body more regularly in that way than just sitting in a cushy office. And indeed, we find today, what's the biggest problem among children? What is the biggest problem? Huh? Obesity, yes, is a big problem among children. And so that wasn't there before. So I think that we have to look at the statistics with something.
Yeah, so that is a very good argument that we observe our grandfathers, that they have been living a longer life. And also we can doubt their statistics. And also this process is very gradual. So we might see local peaks and minimas, but the overall trend over the thousands of years is decreasing. But so we can't trust these numbers. So the abortion, counting them is not a very good according to me.
Not a good argument, counting them? The footnote is on page, it's to the first verse of the second chapter of the 12th canto. It says here, life expectancy of conceived children. So if we, the process of conception is for increasing the population. So I think it's relevant to include that. I do, personally. Any other question? Yes, Gopal.